There we go. That one had some volume. The first one, I feel like I hit my palms together wrong. And I think if I did that in front of an alien, they'd be like, oh, is that how claps are? And then they would have them wrong forever. It's like, oh, it's a muffled, awkward attack. And it's like, no, they're not supposed to be that way. I'm sorry, aliens that are spying on us right now. Very apologetic. Cameron, I made a chopping mall reference today at work.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't so much a reference as more of like, someone mentioned getting like big robots to clean because I clean the plant because we have troubles hiring custodians. And I was like, oh, we should get the ones from Chopping Mall. And everyone was like, what the fuck is that? And so I'm explaining Chopping Mall to senior leadership and getting really off track on this meeting when we were supposed to be talking about, acquisitions and stuff like that. It's like, no, you have to understand the robots got struck by lightning and then killed teenagers. And it was a really stupid movie. It's on YouTube. And it was very funny for me.
I love how that movie in particularly, like, seems to resonate with you.
I don't know why it won't go away.
It's a good movie, though. Like, it's fun to watch. It's just, I feel like there's other movies that I would compare it to that I find fun to watch that I couldn't pay you to sit through.
Now I kind of want to try and watch one of these movies with you.
Do you want to watch Sharks of the Corn?
Oh, God. Isn't that like 2.5 hours long?
See what I mean?
Yeah, but Chopping Mall is like a solid 90 minutes. You can put up with a bad movie for 90 minutes.
That's fair, and it's true. But that's kind of what I mean, is you do clearly have your tastes and your limits. But what I find interesting is how like abruptly, like Chopping Mall is this perfect thing where it's just like, oh, you love it. And if it was like 30 seconds longer, then you would probably like block it from your memory as the worst time you ever had.
You're not wrong. That is an accurate read of this situation. I do like that we watched it, though, because it, like I said, it is something I get to bring up and razzle dazzle the commoners with that movie.
Yeah, the more interesting stories that you have in your back pocket, the harder it is to sit in a booth at the restaurant and you kind of tilt sideways. And that's a conversation piece.
That reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where George had too much stuff in his wallet.
We got in this debate the other night. I was talking to some friends and we were talking about wallets. And it ended up with everyone in the Discord taking a photo of their wallet sitting on their computer desk to like compare how thick everyone's wallets were.
Ooh.
And it was like everybody had super thick wallets. And somebody was like, this is why you can't put them in your back pocket because you're gonna ruin your back. It's like the Seinfeld episode. And I asked, like, why do you guys feel your wallet when you sit down? Like, is the wallet under your butt cheek when you sit down? Like, is that how low you wear your pants? And apparently I'm the only person that wears my pants high enough that I don't like feel that. My wallet's behind me when I sit.
See, I put my wallet in my front pocket, not because it's stuffed full of stuff, because it's not, but because I feel like if someone were going to pickpocket me or try to rob me, it would be harder to do that with it in my front pocket. So I'm mostly just paranoid.
I think if someone wanted to pickpocket me, they'd have to put up with my tremendous odor. And that would mean that they earned whatever prize that they claimed.
Nurgle would be proud. How thick is your wallet? Now I'm curious.
Not that thick.
Like, I feel like my wallet is thick just because it's a naturally thick wallet. There's not a lot of stuff in it.
Well, that's the thing. I have a small wallet, and I have, I don't carry cash anymore. And I have, I want to say, like, I got, like, my driver's license card, and, like, two important cards, and then two different payment cards, and that's it. Like, I don't, like, keep reference stuff or receipts or cards that I don't use. You know, I don't have my GameStop membership card that expired in 97. And I know that, like, sometimes people are like, man, I gotta clean out my wallet. And I'm like, what do you mean you have to clean out your wallet? Like, take your driver's license and put it in your pocket. You're done.
Okay, so One, I went to grab my wallet and I almost fell out of my chair because evidently I am uncoordinated. And two, I'm feeling kind of attacked. I didn't think I was too bad, but maybe I am. Like, I got my driver's license, of course, and then I have my... Oh, I have my old COVID vaccination thing, even though I have a picture of that on my phone, so I really don't need to keep that anymore. My health insurance card. I think that's all I got on this little bit. Just kind of those two things. That's not so bad. I have two credit cards, a company credit card, so I have three. And then I have a Quick Trip gift card that I'm slowly going through because I'm only using it to buy coffee, so it'll last a while. Then I have a Quick Trip rewards card. So whenever I do all go to buy coffee, I get points so I can get a free coffee.
Well, yeah, but you use that.
I do use it. I do. I'm
talking about like, oh, here's my library card. Oh, here's my Subway card. I don't eat at Subway anymore since Jared got arrested 13 years ago. But here's my Subway card.
I have my my university alumni card that I've had for well over a decade. It looks like shit. It's mostly dirt. I should laminate this so it doesn't totally fall apart, but I don't know why I have it.
Why was your thought to laminate it? What's the utility of that?
So it doesn't fall apart, so I can keep it forever.
But keep it why?
I don't know.
But yeah, that's what does it do?
Then I have a River City Hobbies game card and River City Hobbies graphic novel card. And I'll be honest, it's been a hot minute since I've been in those stores, but I got a decent amount of punches on the hobby card or on the game one. Oh, I only need to spend 15 more bucks and I get $20. I should go and buy more Warhammer stuff.
Did you see the new Blood Bowl team?
Is that the gnome one?
Yeah.
It's cute.
I wasn't going to get another Blood Bowl team because I bought the vampires. And then like the week I bought the vampires, they announced these gnomes with like cute little animals. Like one of the players is just a fox that like steals the ball. And yeah, then another one is just a goose that will, like, tackle players because it's an asshole.
I kind of feel like the goose has been turned into an internet joke in a way I don't like anymore. Like, it's not funny anymore.
It's not funny anymore. However, it's charming and whimsical because, like, they're, like, forest gnomes. So I tolerate it.
Yeah, I get you.
But, yeah, the whole, like, the goose being the deadliest animal meme is, like, I get it. It's been covered.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a strong introduction talking about chopping mall and wallets. We have kind of an idea, unless you want to go. Do you need to talk or I don't know what's going on.
I'm sorry. So I thought it'd be funny if I just made complimentary sounds while you talked.
Oh,
it was good in concept, but I don't think it came across very well.
Hey, I'll get you doing a thing, because the idea that the topic of the day is ideas versus execution. And I wanted to talk about this for kind of selfish reasons, because my last short story I did for my writer's group, I had so much fun writing and I thought it was neat. And I was like, man, this is going to go over really well. And it didn't. People were like, what the fuck is this? This is weird. It's confusing. I don't know what's going on. Josh was too high to read it, which I feel like isn't my fault, but also you can't control your audience. And it got me thinking, like, the relationship between, you know, the execution and the idea. Because sometimes you have a really good idea and you execute it poorly. Sometimes you have kind of a mediocre idea, but you execute it really well. I can think about, you know, endless pop culture stuff that would fit into these kind of categories. The first one that actually came to mind was Ready Player One. I think there are great ideas in Ready Player One, and it's a terrible book because they're just executed really poorly, and the novel doesn't give enough of a shit about its good ideas. And I think that's kind of interesting.
I mean, the thing with Ready Player One, I think we have talked about it before, but one of the things that bothers me is that it feels like the idea isn't even that original. And that's what kind of bothers me, is that these concepts have been covered before and better.
Yeah. And I was hoping, you know, you're starting this book and you're like, well, maybe he'll do something different with them and it'll be like not all the because I think Snow Crash did a lot of that stuff, but better.
So they did the sequel, right? He did Ready Player Two.
Yes.
Is he gonna do another one where, like, they have a kid and it's like Ready Player 3 colon DLC and they have it's the child is the chosen one.
I would love for him to do that, and then they try to force feed the kid 80s pop culture, and then the kid rebels by liking 90s pop culture, and so then it's just 90s stuff for, you know, and it's still like a needlessly horrible book.
It's 2010s pop culture.
Ooh.
And he's like, he's retro throwback to like Cocomelon and all this like weird, like terrible, like Elsa Spider-Man YouTube videos.
I would actually appreciate the shitpost artistry of that. Because there's an irony there.
That would actually be more commentary than the first book.
Yeah, that would...
Which frustrates me.
Ernest Cline, if you're listening, one, you're fucking awful at your craft and you should stop. But two, I need you to write Ready Player 3 with these specific instructions in mind. I think he heard us.
Chapter 1, New Game Plus.
Oh, it's sad because part of it too is just the idea of like sometimes the things you make that are really fun are not fun to consume, and it feels very unfair because you would hope like the enthusiasm would you know carry itself through the process, and it doesn't always work out that way.
You wrote me the other day with this as a idea, and I forgot exactly how you worded it, but you said you'd like to talk about like good ideas versus good execution.
Yes.
My first thought was, yes, I love talking about George Lucas.
Oh, hell yeah. That is a mighty example.
It's a mighty example.
Tell me about Sir George Lucas.
I'm sorry, someone just wrote me something half important. I want to clear it up before it turns into a thing. Okay, enough of that. I hope I remember to edit this out because it's stupid. So, excuse me. I was talking to somebody the other day about Star Wars because it was a day that ends in Y, and I'm Cameron.
Yeah. And I'm Chad.
And what was... you're right. It's opinions are cheap with Cameron Chad.
Yay, we did it.
Good catch. And the topic of like, I don't like the sequels. The prequels, and we've all heard it before. And somebody was complaining about how George Lucas is a hack, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I really liked the Clone Wars. And then someone said, that was the worst movie. And I said, no, that's not a movie. And I had to explain what the Clone Wars was and what George's involvement was, where he was an ideas guy who then gave the ideas to writers. And then a director told the voice actors how to act. And then it turned out a lot better and smarter. And I showed him video clips of like various highlights and interesting moments and various reasons people like this stuff. And it's like they were like in disbelief that George Lucas was involved at all with any ideas. But it's like he's really creative because I think that first Star Wars movie worked pretty good.
Right.
He also had a lot of help editing. And then people love Empire, which was directed by someone else. And it's like, yeah, you need to play to your strengths if you want to execute it right. But the concept, like the impetus of it all, I didn't say that right. George Lucas's ideas sparked a lot of stuff. Like you look at the amount of Star Wars content still being made by both official channels and fan channels. That's a lot of fire coming from one spark, you know?
Yeah. The movies thing is interesting because my immediate thought is Ridley Scott. And I feel like as a director, he's really good. Like he knows how to frame a shot. He knows how to build dramatic tension with the cinematography. You know, his movies look pretty. Even his old stuff looks pretty. But when he's the writer, you never know what you're going to get out of him. Because sometimes he's like, great. And other times you get, you know, Alien Covenant or that weird ass Robin Hood movie. Or him going to, I think it was a Russell Crowe that was in Gladiator. And he was like, yeah, it'd be cool to do like a sequel to this where like, you know, that character dies. And he's like, no. He's like, there's time travel. And he's got like this weird, I have no idea if it's a joke or not idea that it'll probably never happen. The sequel to this movie that is like one of his best movies kind of thing. You're like, what are you talking about, Mr. Ridley Scott? What is going through your head? Like, I feel like his best movies, I don't know if he wrote them. I think other people wrote them and he just directed.
I also like, I kind of wonder sometimes what the process is because particularly like very large movies, sometimes director means different things to different people.
Yeah.
I think Steven Spielberg in particular can be very effective as a director in terms of getting reactions out of actors. Like, he's very good at dealing with people and getting them to act well. But he's also notoriously difficult to work with as a cinematographer because he has this really bad habit of asking you to get off the camera so he can do it.
Oh.
And what's funny is we're talking about Ready Player One. When you watch that movie, you can tell which scenes he was involved in because the actors and the camera both work very differently, but only for like these like short 5-minute scenes that happen like 4 times in the movie. Because he's like technically co-director and it's like, oh, those are the 4 scenes he did.
Oh, that's funny.
And the rest all looks like Marvel slop.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too, is like, you know, the Marvel movies all have a bunch of different directors, but they're ultimately edited by and put together by and run by, you know, Kevin Feige and the committee. And so they're cohesive, which is great. I mean, I think there's something to be said for that. But also, like, yeah, what's the role of the director in a Marvel movie when, you know, all of your raw footage is going to someone else and they're going to make it fit in with the cinematic universe? And how much artistry do you really have? And how much say do you really have? It's got to be frustrating.
Yeah. But also, I wonder, like, what would it really be like? Because when a bad movie happens, sometimes it's like, who is there to blame? Like, did someone know, boy, this director is doing such a bad job, we just can't save it? Or is it like, oh, this was going to look so good, and then at the last minute, they cut our CGI budget, and all our dreams are dashed, and we all worked so hard on it. Like, it's hard to say. Because every bad movie seems to have a different story, and sometimes it's like, he was a nightmare to work with, or, oh, this script was bad from day one.
Yeah, and, The Rodriguez Predator movie. It's kind of a mess. And half of that is his fault, because I guess some of the shitty parts of his script were just always in the script. But then the other half is you know, Fox going, hey, it needs to do this. It needs to end this way. We want to do some sequel setup just in case. And so they had to, like, rewrite and reshoot the ending at one point. It's like a lot of Act 3. And you're like, okay, so whose fault is it that this movie kind of sucks? Is it his fault? Because some of this is his fault. Or is it, you know, the execs at Fox who thought they had it all figured out? Because I think the weakest part of that movie is the last third of it, where it just kind of loses focus on what the fuck is going on.
I brought it up before, but you know how we have the original script for the Mario movie?
The original script for the Mario, like the, which Mario movie?
The 1993 one.
Okay.
It's one of those things that I keep thinking about because it's like, I want to use this somehow. Like, I would love to do like a live read, like a performance or something.
It'd be kind of fun to go into one of those acting worlds in VR chat and then just like use the avatars and just act it out on stage.
Yeah, it would be very interesting. And it's like, I think there's a lot of logistics because also I don't know what the text limit is. Like, I know there's that one world where you can technically copy and paste in your own script, but it's like, I don't know how big that goes. I should probably go check, because if you could actually just do the entire script, that would be kind of bonkers.
That would be nuts.
But it might be the only way to pull that off.
I think depending on what you wanted to do with that, like if you're going to film it, and put it on YouTube as a funny video, you'd probably just go like a scene at a time, and then you could record a scene at a time, because it would just be easier to work with, and you could do it in sections and chunks and not do it all in one go.
Yeah. I think if I wanted to film something like that, especially if I'm doing it through VR chat, getting the audio right would be such a nightmare. I would only want to commit to like something about 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
So I think this would be more for fun, but it's like, who can you convince to read an entire movie script for fun? So it's like, okay, maybe we take like the first so many scenes and we only do like a portion.
Right.
And see how that goes or something. You know, we could maybe do that. But it's also one of these things where I love how this website exists, because there's like a Mario Brothers Movie Museum website that basically catalogs all the weird changes and behind the scenes. And it's like, man, at a couple points they had these interesting ideas, but you know, the execution is there for us to see. And yeah, it's well documented how messy it got.
I feel like movies are probably some of the best examples of this, because you can either see the script, or you know that there's a disconnect between the script writer and the director, or that there isn't a disconnect and there should have been, depending on the movie. Like, I know Prometheus gets a lot of shit, and I watched the behind the scenes on the making of that, and like the original script by John Spates was pretty different than what was delivered by David Lindelof, and it's largely because as they were working on it and Ridley was getting involved, he just had different ideas and different things he wanted to do, and as far as like the themes and direction of the movie. But ultimately, he did not write the script for that movie. He just had a lot of say in where it was going. But I believe he wrote the script for Alien Covenant. And it's like, maybe you shouldn't have. I'm trying to think of other examples, and I had some, and then of course I didn't write them down because, you know, it's this show. But the good ideas, bad execution, or bad ideas but good execution.
Well, I think do you want to hop genres a bit, or media?
Yeah, let's do that.
Because we could certainly talk a little bit about various terrible video games.
Sure.
I think the trick is finding a bad video game that was maybe conceptually good. So it's like, why did it turn out bad?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of some.
Are you familiar at all with the new Suicide Squad game?
No, not at all.
Oh, really?
I didn't even know there was one.
Oh, yikes. Okay, did you ever play those like Arkham games where you're Batman and it makes you feel like you really are Batman?
No, but I have seen footage of them and they seem like they are good games.
Yeah, so that studio has been working on a Suicide Squad game.
Okay.
So they announced that at some point after a long period of not really saying anything. And I think that was kind of a red flag in the first place, because it kind of implies that maybe they were working on something that got canceled.
Oh.
And so it's like, oh, okay. I think there's rumors that maybe they wanted to make a Superman game and they couldn't make it work, so they had to shelve that or something. I don't know. But anyways, they announced a Suicide Squad game. And the idea is that it's a multiplayer game. And it's co-op, so you play as different members. And so it's like, okay, that's a little different than being Batman and like running around and solving mysteries, but also like it makes sense. It's different, you know, the computers are stronger now. You could run around in a big open world city multiplayer, like why not, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a little bit more time passes and it's like, well, it's not really like Batman, where you like you run around and stuff, like you don't run up and punch people. You know, it's a shooter. All the characters are shooters, and I think that raised a few red flags for people, because I think like you look at Killshot, and it's like, yeah, he's really good at shooting, makes sense. And then you look at King Shark, and like, what's his favorite gun?
Right.
And you look at Harley Quinn, and it's like, what's her favorite gun? And you look at Captain Boomerang, and it's like, what's his favorite gun?
Boomerang.
So I don't know. What is this game going to look like? So fast forward a little bit, and some screenshots leak. And it's got like a battle pass, and you can buy cosmetic skins and stuff. And you get these like repeat missions, so you can like grind out currency to earn more currency for the other currency to complete your battle pass so that you can get the green Harley Quinn costume.
Yay!
It finally comes out, and basically all the characters like feel exactly the same. Like there's no personality to speak of. There's kind of these boss fights, but it's like there's a total of 4 of them. And those are maybe like the highlight of the game. So it's like there's 4 good boss fights, but after that, you don't really want to play it anymore. And it sparked some confusion because it's like, what went wrong? Oh, also, like visually, people compared it to the last game, which was Arkham Knight. It takes place in Gotham, I think, but it's like visually, it's a downgrade. Like the water looks worse. And the buildings seem to have like a lower texture resolution, and they don't seem to reflect the same. And it's like, it just objectively looks worse from a technical standpoint. And so people are trying to figure out like, well, what happened? Like, why would this get so bad? Excuse me.
Right. Because like Arkham Knight came out a while ago, right? Like that was that a console generation ago?
It might have actually been like a couple console generations ago. That might have been a PS3 game. I could be wrong. Let me double check that. So Arkham Knight came out in 2015.
That was a while ago.
So it kind of just raised questions of like, of course the Battle Pass stuff isn't like a game designer sits down and goes like, you know what I vision, what people will have fun playing, is a daily grind where they fill out a battle pass. It's like that stuff comes from the marketing department. That comes from a side thing. Someone else is making that order. But it's like the other parts where like the fun half of the team can make decisions. None of those decisions were fun. So it's like, what happened?
Yeah, that's one of those things where the making of would be more interesting than the thing that was made.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's what sparked a lot of things. Is like these Arkham games have such an amazing legacy. And I think that like the two head guys at this company, like they kind of quit the company about the time this game came out. Like they worked on it. And now they're gone. It's like, okay, something went on. So I have to imagine, and a lot of other people speculate, nothing's confirmed, but there's probably like conceptually a good idea somewhere that got completely smothered and choked out.
Sure.
And a lot of people are like, I wonder what that idea was.
I was thinking less about video games when you said let's jump ship and more about comic books. Because I've definitely read comic books that are like really bad but have amazing art, or vice versa, where like, man, this is a great story. I wish the artwork wasn't so either bad or like strongly mediocre. I think it's Tony Fleeks that did, he used to do a bunch of the My Little Pony comics, but he's been doing stuff for Image. And he had a series called Stray Dogs that was ostensibly about some guy would adopt dogs, or like the dogs would show up at his house and he had all these dogs. And it was the dogs were like starting to remember and find evidence that, you know, they had previous owners. What happened to the previous owners? What's going on? And it was like this murder mystery, but it was dogs, and the dogs were easily distracted and not very smart. And the artwork was really good. It was super cute. Coloring was great. The you know, good use of like panel layouts and shadows and stuff. But the story itself was stupid, and the dialogue was kind of bad. And it was such a weird thing, because I ended up reading it every issue until the first arc was over. And it was largely just because it was so good to look at. And you're like, okay, there's got to be a twist. I'm just going to wait till a twist shows up, and I probably won't like it, but I at least want it. I'll stick around that long. And then ultimately, there really wasn't a twist, just like the guy was killing people and stealing their dogs for whatever reason. It didn't make any sense, and it was really bad. But by God, did that have good artwork.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if we've talked about this guy before or not. What's his name? Andrew Dobson.
Andrew Dobson. That name is vaguely familiar, but I don't know why.
So, he's a cartoonist. And he's very frustrating to me personally. Because it's like, I find him so, like, painfully relatable. Where it's like, man, if he was like, if he went to my school, I would have taken him aside and just, like, talked to him. And he it might have, like, changed his life. Because he was, like, so close. You know what I mean? I think he's a good artist. He's a very good cartoonist. He knows what he likes. He studies the kind of cartoons he likes. He knows how to compose a panel. Like, objectively, I think he knows what he's doing. And so it's very frustrating because he just doesn't seem to... I don't know if he's never tried to or if he just can't work with others, but he's not a writer.
Mm.
And he doesn't write well. And when I say that, I mean, he tends to do things that either embarrass himself or otherwise maybe just didn't age well in hindsight, which I don't always hold against people, but it's like, why? How come everything you've touched is bad? Like why? You know.
I like when I Google him. One of the first thing that comes up is the bad web comics wiki, and it's like, oh, you know, you did well.
He's sort of a lolcow, and I feel like it's not quite deserved. But then other times he'll really put his foot in his mouth, and it's like, whatever.
Sure.
I think like most famously he. You remember, who's that guy that was in Jumanji? Robin Williams? You know, that guy that everybody loves?
Yeah, Robin Williams.
So, remember when he committed suicide and caught everyone by surprise, and, like, we were all shocked and kind of mourning together?
Yeah, still sad about that.
Yeah, and then his daughter on Twitter said something along the lines of how sad she was.
What did Andrew Dobson do that he should not have done?
You know, this deserves exactly the correct language, so I don't maybe besmirch anyone. So I'm going to send you this, and you can read it out loud, because it's kind of fun.
Alrighty, so this is Zelda Williams saying, "This week has been a tough one, near and far. Sometimes I fight it with laughter, other times information. Today, strangely, I'm at a loss." And Andrew Dobson added Zelda Williams with looks like a cartoon from Thor. And Thor's holding his hammer and he looks a little sad. He's looking down and there's a Valkyrie and she's looking up and she's saying, "Calm thine tits," in a awkward font. And I don't understand this exchange at all, other than like why? What a weird thing to happen. Of course, it's on Twitter. Goes without saying. But why?
So it's an important context, and he's the first one to bring it up as well. He did delete the tweet and apologize because of a misunderstanding. He read Zelda's tweet under some poor context and thought that this was something else.
Oh.
This is not representative of his character.
Okay.
However, this exchange sums up a lot of his career decisions and how he acts a lot, which is very unfortunate.
Sure.
I think that's how I describe his career, is unfortunate, because again, I do think he's a very good cartoonist. Like, it bothers me that he never, you know, found a writer that could maybe help. There's one in particular that frustrates me, where he did this little thing. Andrew Dobson D&D comic. He did this one comic where he was like making fun of people that like to play D&D, because he has like, he has this thing where I think he's trying to do that relatable, like, oh, I'm a nerd and I get put down all the time, kind of a like you know, hashtag relatable sort of character. And so sure. He does that like autobiographical comic where it's like, here's just my life. You know, hey, I had a, you know, here's one of those high school memories. We're all there, right? And so he does this one where he's driving his car and he's stopped by a game store. But it's like a, you know, like a traditional, like a trading card game store. It's not a GameStop. Like, clearly. But he's driving his car by and he's like, well, maybe this place has a copy of Smash Bros. And there's a sign that says closed. And it says, odd, but the door's unlocked, so I'm going to go in anyways. And it's like, already, I would write this completely differently. Because, first of all, you can find Smash Brothers at Target. Like, you're not going to be going to some shady store you've never been to.
Also, if the sign says closed,
you're not going to just walk in. Like, there's like problems, like, structurally. He steps in, is like, hi, I'm looking for a GameCube game. And then all these, like, old nerds are sitting at a table with D&D stuff. And they're glaring at him. And so then he's all nervous. And so he's like, I'll look somewhere else. And then they're making fun of him and calling him a geek. And that's the end of the comic.
Yeah, that's certainly a webcomic.
And it's just sort of like, it's a little weird because it's like you're kind of doing that, oh, we've all been there, right? While he's simultaneously like putting down geeks and nerds by saying, boy, those D&D nerds are so mean, huh?
Yeah, there's a...
What?
Weird messaging.
There's another one where he gets McDonald's that I've never understood fully because it's like, I don't know why you I don't know why you published this comic. He's sitting at a school desk. I assume this is supposed to be like high school, or this might have been while he's in college. And he's like, all right, class is over and it's Friday. And he says out loud, who's going to McDonald's night? And everyone else just kind of looks at him. And then the next panel is him sitting alone at a McDonald's. And he's just kind of minding his own business and enjoying his McDonald's.
Hey, if you look at the character's arms, it's a little like Loss, where you got one up, and a different. And then, oh no, then they're kind of horizontal. Maybe it's a secret Loss comic.
Chad, you have no idea how like incredibly proud I am that you noticed that.
I did it. Did I make you happy, Father?
Yeah, you made me very proud today. now the reason I bring this one up is for some reason I like this comic is just like it's nothing. Like it's kind of just like a nothing comic. But it's like not long after that he did this other one where he's complaining about Windows and how much better Mac is. And it's very wordy and preachy. But his metaphor is how a Windows PC is something stupid, like eating McDonald's, whereas Mac is something healthy, like fruits and vegetables.
Oh, yeah, that's... Does he have, like, a main character? Because it seems like everything he posts is, like, different characters, which is kind of strange for a webcomic. Like, that's not something you see very often. Usually there's, like, a cast that you follow.
Oh, I can't find it. So someone... There's a really good edit where someone just did that McDonald's night one, but they photoshopped the last panel where he's eating a Windows PC. You asked about his main character. I want to say his more iconic, like online persona is the blue bear that he used as a Twitter icon earlier.
I like the blue bear.
I think it's a good character design. Again, he's a good artist. He understands character design. He understands how to compose a frame. He understands how to do word bubbles correctly. Like all of these are easy to read. They're just difficult to process what the point is sometimes.
Yeah.
excuse me. This comic in particular, I don't think it's a bad comic. A lot of people kind of make fun of him for being like a white knight, but it's like, I don't feel that way. But it's like, he's at a convention and there's like a Supergirl cosplayer and then there's some like weirdo taking pictures of her. And so he takes a bat and is like beating him and then it goes to like a 911 call where someone's like, a blue bear is hitting me with a bat. And it's fine.
You know what's interesting, and I don't have examples on hand, but as far as the reverse of this, where it's like bad idea but good execution, I feel like there are slasher movies that you'd be like, that's stupid, I would never watch this, and then you watch it and like the kills are really fun and like creative, and you're like, oh, this is actually kind of awesome. Maybe Aliens vs. Predator 2 comes to mind a little bit. Like, the thesis for that movie, like, everything about it is not what I want out of Aliens vs. Predator at all. It's not good. But some of the random acts of violence against teenagers and just, like, people that you wouldn't normally be violent against in any kind of movie, like pregnant women and babies and dogs, it's kind of fun. Like, it is just a very mean-spirited, cruel movie with some kind of fun kills. And it's like, actually, I kind of like the second Aliens vs. Predator movie for that reason.
Totally. And that can happen. I wish I had more examples come to mind, because I'm sure as soon as we're done recording, we're going to think of like 20 more.
Yeah, I had so many on the car ride home, and I was like thinking of like music and TV shows and all this stuff and trying to go back and forth between the two. And like I said, I didn't write any of them down. I think music's an interesting one, because you can have like ostensibly really good song ideas, but maybe the production's not very good, or like the singing isn't good. God knows, I've heard songs like, this is cool, I love the intro to the song, I can't wait till it really kicks off. And then like whoever's on vocals is like either not singing in a style I like, or they don't have a good scream. Oh, Knock Loose is a really good example of that. That guy's got a really strange kind of iconic high-pitched yell that people either like or fucking hate. I'm personally not a fan of it.
This is more of a matter of taste, but really, there are so many songs where I prefer a cover over the real song. Most of the time, it's not so much that the original is bad in terms of execution, but it's kind of the vibe where it's like, oh, someone had these pieces here, but then someone else added a funny clown horn, and now I'd love it.
Yeah.
They finished it.
I got this timestamp. This is, I can't remember the guy's name from Knock Loose, but this is their, like, his vocal style is a really high-pitched kind of yell. There's not a lot of distortion, but there's definitely some. It's really hard to explain. It's very strange.
Hey everybody. I'm really angsty.
And I don't like it. Like, I do not like Knock Loose. It is largely because of their vocalist.
I'm going to get you.
Writing is more interesting.
Yeah, oh, no. I think I see what you mean, though.
It's a shame, too, because their songs get, like, so, like, compositionally, they're very good. Their guitar tone's great. Like, they get just so pissed off. And there's a certain energy and, like, freneticness to their music that you don't often hear. And so there's something special about it. And you're like, hell yeah, this is great. And then he kicks on. I'm like, oh, no, I can't do this. I'm sorry. Cattle Decapitation, their screamer has a couple of tones he uses that I really can't stand. And so that's another one where I'm like, I really want to like this. And then he'll do something that just grates my ears in a way that is not like what I want out of heavy metal music. And it's like, nope, I'm out. For a quick book idea, and that's only because I'm looking at the book right now because it's on my shelf. But Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson is a great idea. And there's a great story there. And the execution is not great. Because as a writer, he is either very good or very mediocre. And so that book, the moon explodes and the earth is going to end. Because the fragments are going to like rain down and it's going to kill everybody. And so it's humanity trying to build some kind of space station that can support enough people to basically like preserve the human race for when, you know, they can keep building the space station. And when the earth is inhabitable, they can come back. But because it's like hard sci-fi, and there's so much research involved that he spends so many pages explaining sci-fi concepts that are not important to the story. He just like, no, you have to know how much research I did, so I got to put this in the book. And I feel like you could cut 200 to 300 pages out of this story and it would be way better, which is insane. Like, that's a whole book that you could remove from this book and it would be a better book. But the core of it's good. His writing is fine. It's just like what he focuses on is weird to me.
So this is venturing too much into like taste category. But it, like I've said before, I just really don't like Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I remember trying to get through that book and it was just, it turned into such a slog where I just didn't care about anything. And I just did not care at all. And it wouldn't stop. And it's like, oh my gosh. He likes the word grope so much. I get it. And I was so burnt out. And by the time it was over, it's like, yeah, I don't understand the appeal at all. And I moved on. And I remember, like, later somebody was, you know, they brought up the show or something. And they talked about, like, oh, it, you know, this thing happened, whatever. This is coolest thing ever. And they mentioned, what's his name? Like, Ned gets executed at the end of season one, I guess.
Yep.
And they're saying how, like, utterly surprised they were. And I don't know if the show's done different. But it's like, I thought that's what the whole book was about. Because that's like, they tell you that's what's going to happen in the, like, the first line of the first chapter. Like, that's how the book opens. Like, that was supposed to be shocking. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what... I know that I'm not super smart. So it's not like I'm too smart for Game of Thrones. But it's like, come on, right? Am I alone here?
I don't remember how that book's... It's been... over a decade since I've read Game of Thrones, and I've never seen the TV show. I liked the books when I first went through them quite a bit. I do remember being fairly, like, taken aback by Ned's death.
Okay.
But I don't remember how much it's foreshadowed in the prose, and I was listening to it as an audiobook at work, and so not kind of the normal way you'd maybe consume a book. And like I said, this is like a decade ago. I keep meaning I want to reread those so bad, but I want the next one to get announced first. And it's been so long. Don't think it's going to happen. I have hope, but I'm concerned.
I think it'd be really cool if I was George R. R. Martin. The book would be done right now. And surgically, it would be on like a little like thumb drive that's been implanted inside my heart. And they'll only find it after I die. Because I won't tell anyone about it.
I would be upset by this, but he will die before me.
And that
me.
Way, they'll like no one can critique it, no matter how bad it is.
Well, the problem is there's going to be at least one more after. Because there's going to be seven.
Why?
And honestly, he at one point he's like, you know, there could be like eight or nine. There's a lot of stuff I'd like to cover. And it's like, dude, no.
Okay, so the coroner is doing the autopsy, and he finds that the thumb drive with the sixth book in his heart. And he says, I found it, the sixth book. And everyone reads it and says, wow, it's amazing. It's a shame we won't get the next 18 books. It's like, oh, those were in the other thumb drives that he put up his rectum.
Hooray!
They're all here.
Rectum, hardly rectum. What? I'm trying to think. I know we're at 54 minutes. If there's any, like, mediocre stuff with good execution. And I know we've maybe talked a little
one.
Bit. What?
Shopping mall?
You know, why not?
I think that, sincerely, I think that sometimes if you just say, like, what's that make a 64 phrase that we all know and love? Like, you know, it made you laugh, it's worth a dollar. Like, sometimes yep. Something's so stupid, but it's like, you know what? You stuck the landing. Here's a medal. There's nothing wrong with just enjoying something because it's enjoyable. And it can just happen organically. Someone had a bad idea for a movie and it's like, hey, but you know what? Let's film it. And they did it. And the whole movie's pretty enjoyable. And by the end, the nerd kisses the girl and they walk out of the chopping mall. And they say, we'll chop again another day, and the credits roll.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like the negative stuff, it's so much easier to remember that. And I hate that that's true. But, like, when it came to, like, oh, good ideas, bad execution, I feel like, you know, we were able to churn some stuff out and had names at the top of our our lips and whatnot, the tips of our tongues. But when it's the reverse, it's like, oh, I gotta think a little harder about this. And maybe it's because the mediocre stuff with good execution just isn't inherently as memorable, because once you pull the execution away, it's something kind of mediocre or something kind of bad. And the stuff that's like, you know, rated on a 10 scale, like 4 to 6, you kind of just forget much more easily. Whereas the really bad stuff and the really good stuff, it kind of ingrains itself a little better.
I do wish our brains worked a little different, though.
It would be nice sometimes.
Sometimes.
I feel like I've had some, like, paint schemes on minis that were like, oh, that was a good idea, but bad execution. But that's not what we're talking about. Oh, no. I've also had some paint schemes that were like, oh, that was a mediocre idea with good execution. Thank you, Null Noil, for saving my paint jobs.
Oh, what was it? I saw something the other day. There was like a video about like, oh, I'm never using Null Noil again. I have this new thing. I was like, oh, I'm really curious what this other technique is. I can't imagine doing this. It was like 7 different chemicals that are mixed at very specific percentages and then like 5 steps to wipe them very specifically and correctly to get the exact effect down right. And it's like, hey, you know, it looks pretty good, but I put some Null Noil on my model and it looks pretty good too.
Was that like Goosh or something like that? It's got a really weird name.
Was that the YouTuber?
No. The product.
No, this was like, this wasn't a specific product. It was like, he was combining different things and techniques. And it was like, he was like inventing his own process that's like his signature thing instead of regular oils. And it's like, because there's other things. There's other similar ways to get like wear and dirt and stuff onto scale models. And they do make better things than Null Noil. But if you're looking for something that's cost effective, as expensive as Citadel paints are, it's really not bad.
Mm-hmm. I've had a couple YouTubers that I watch for mini painting that have gotten into the habit of, instead of doing like that kind of wash, they'll spray a varnish on it, they'll get like an oil-based wash that they have to mix with something, and then they put that on and let it dry and then rub it off with mineral spirits so they can be really precise on where they leave it. And they're like, I really like this. And I'm like, I'm way too lazy for that shit. I will use Null Noil or Army Painter Strong Tone or just, you know, a generic ass wash. Like, I'm not competing for a Golden Demon. And anybody who is also not using washes. They're manually painting and all of that shit. So why like find this mid ground of like, it's difficult and it gives you the same result. And the result's still not actually that great compared to like what you could do by actually being just like a next level amazing painter. It's like, nah, I'm good.
Was that our cue for GladSpace?
I thought of a mediocre idea with good execution, and it was when I was born.
Wait, where's my just a minute. Here we go.
I said that because someone in a writer's group literally just like, gave birth today, and she posted a picture of her daughter. She's a very cute little baby.
You should go. You should send them a little baby shirt that says self-published.
Oh my god, that's such a fucking good idea. Is it though? Actually,
no.
I feel like I thought about it and it stopped being a good idea. Oh well, swing and a miss. I like it though. I'm gonna say you self-published her, because that to me is still kind of funny. Anyways, do we want to do a glad... I hope this was fun. I feel like I had more fun thinking about this and then forgetting than I did talking, and I feel bad for the listeners. But I did enjoy the conversation.
Good idea, but poor execution.
The genie strikes again.
Did you read the description on the show last week?
No, I did not.
Let me pull it up, because it made me giggle. I was proud of myself. the title was Curse of the Genie's Riddle. And the description was, this week, Cameron and Chad make a wish on a magical lamp in order to get a free episode of the show. The result is 1 hour of a microphone sitting next to an unlit oil lamp.
Nice. I like that.
Also, because we talked about other things, but I put no hint at what that could have been. So if anyone ever tries to find that episode, they'll never be able to. What was that one where they talked about Transformers? I searched for Transformers. It didn't come up.
She appreciated the self-published joke, so that one was a winner.
Good.
I want to go first. I had a glad space. I went and saw a concert this week. Breaking Benjamin and Daughtry played at the La Crosse Center, which is not a crazy big venue, like holds about 5,000, 6,000 people. And that was fun. It's been so long since we've had like a proper rock concert at that venue. And it was just really nice to be back there because it's been like before COVID was the last one we had. So it was like 2018, 2019, I think. And being back there and like Breaking Benjamin are a very fun rock band. They just are really consistent. They have a lot of really good rock songs that are easy to sing along with. And it was a blast. And like I didn't drink at all because I'm on Sober April. I'm on day four of Sober April and I want to drink. But I had an NA beer tonight, which is all right. So sober. But it was still a good show. And you know, that's it. Just got to see a concert.
That's a good glad space, though.
We were really close to like the sound mixing area, and like the people on the sound booth were doing a really good job. Like certain parts of the song, they'd, you know, crank like the kick drum and the bass, and you just get hit with it, and then they'd bring it back down as the song kind of moved. And you know, there was a lot of just little things they were doing to make the experience a lot more tactile. And I really appreciated being next to them because I feel like that's where the full effect was. And it added a lot to the show while also being kind of subtle.
I'm trying to remember. I think the last time I saw live music was probably that Weird Al show from like over a year ago.
Didn't you see some like video game theme stuff? Or I think it's something else.
No.
Apparently back in 2015, I saw Breaking Benjamin with Seven Dust. And I fucking do not remember that show at all. Which is weird. I usually have a decent memory for this. And I straight up, I'm like, where was that? I mean, it was 9 years ago. I guess, you know, no reason to remember everything. But, oh, actually, it's closer to 10 years ago. But,
and I love band names. I play on a Space Station 13 server, and I have a character that, like, listens to fictional music, and I love to just make up band names, but it's like, I always have a Google thing open, so I can type in the band name, make sure it's not real first, so it's always like, okay, and then I'll go with that one, because all the band names are taken.
Oh, apparently it was at the La Crosse Center. Cool. Anyways, what is your glad space?
Actually, you mentioned it, and now I kind of want to go back to the Golden Demon. Did you see the 2024 winners?
Yeah, at least I saw some of them. The Rogue Hobbies kind of walked through and did a video.
Yeah, they covered maybe the better ones anyways. But that one particular one at the end, or it's that it's like a vampire standing on water, so you see the reflection.
Yeah, holy shit, what an amazing lead, like just well designed and executed.
It's so good. But I really love the effect of the armor there without any of the like body. Like it just looks so good and like sculpted out and painted and everything. But also like the ghostly like off color glow of everything in the reflection, like it just, it's so neat.
The one that...
looking through a handful of these, they're just like, they're very inspiring, but it's also like, not like I'll get there inspiring, but yeah. It's like, I love seeing what people end up doing.
The Silver Place diorama, I think is the one that really blew me away with the, I can't remember the name of the property, but the Terminators fighting the the aliens, whatever they are, and just it looks like
oh, yeah.
an old piece of video game art. Like, this would be like a Doom box art cover.
A lot of these look like 2D paintings. Like, if you just sort of, if you cropped it correctly and showed it to somebody, you would imagine it was a digital painting.
Yeah.
I really wish that when they put these up on the Warhammer blog, they should be putting up a 3D rotation of the damn model.
That'd be cool.
The one that frustrated me, because this might have been my second favorite after the vampire, but the airplane that was like exploding.
Oh, yeah. That was so creative.
It's really creative because there's a forced perspective effect going on, because what they did was they used a very, very small scale airplane, and then there's like a base that's painted like the skyline, and it narrows as it goes up to where the airplane is. But towards the bottom, you see these two goblins that are like falling out of the plane, and there's like a trail effect of like where they're falling from, and it looks different from different angles. And for some reason, the photo they put up on the blog is the least flattering angle, and it's confusing why it won. And yeah. when you see it from the correct angle, it's amazing. And it's like, why didn't that get first? And so it's like, man, I would love to see these in person.
Yeah, I watched that video and I was like, I'm going to paint a mini. So I went and grabbed one of the ones you sent me ages ago. And just kind of started throwing paint on, and then I got frustrated and threw it in a box, and I haven't gone back to it.
Yeah, I got Richard to try those speed paints.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that he wasn't willing to believe that they would be easy, and then he started painting with them, and he was like, oh, wow, these are easy. Which is honestly a quote they should put on the back of the box. It's just Richard says, oh, yeah, they're easy.
I love that idea. Just so-and-so says they're easy is like a box quote. But also like, yeah, some just normal Richard. Guy's like, hey, no, this shit's great. I like this. And that's who it's for.
And the effect is it looks good. Like what I really like about those paints in particular is there's like an example model in the front. And it's like, yeah, if you use these paints and just slop them on, it will look like this. Like they didn't like get some sort of weird... like turbo expert to do some like illusion.
Ooh, Powerwolf got a new album coming out this year. I hope it's good.
Oh, okay, let's close out, but I tried really hard to give Andrew Dobson like a fair representation, but I do want to technically clarify he did never actually apologize to Zelda Williams.
Oh, no. I'm honestly not surprised, given things we covered.
He doesn't handle words well.
Doesn't seem like
it. I don't
it.
Get it.
One thing I love about this show is, like, I'll have, like, this idea, and my examples will be very, I think, not deep cut anything. It'll be like, oh, I'll mention, like, a band everyone's heard of, or... Marvel or Star Wars, and he'll just be like, so Andrew Dobson, and I'm like, who the fuck is that? And like, I love that back and forth that we have, and you introduce me to such weird shit, and it's great.
I'm like a weird gremlin.
I love how this thing you just sent me, which is definitely not an apology, and someone's like, dude, you still owe Zelda an apology. This is more insincere than when you quote apologized for making fun of shooting victims and their families. It's like, what?
No, I mean, what? Okay, this was his apology. He says, deleted a tweet that was offending people. Probably best I did too, because it came across as kind of rude. Never say I don't apologize.
What a strange person.
Again, I think that the world would be a better place if people didn't have, like, a Twitter to share their first thought without vetting it. Because some people just don't have a filter, and it's, like, it's not even their fault. I think some people, like, if you worked with a guy at the office that sometimes says stupid stuff, you kind of go, ah, that was stupid. But when you have a microphone and 10 million people heard you say it's stupid, and then they demand an apology, and you come back and say, well, no, I'm going to put my foot down. And it's like, why? You could just move on. Why put yourself in this position?
I'm keeping my Twitter on like lockdown for at least another month, and I use it a lot less because I'm not tweeting. So I'll like scroll once in a while and like my friends' tweets that I think are funny and then leave. And it's like, this is a good use of Twitter. It's basically just don't use it. Which I get it's not a brave take anymore, but still.
Yeah, I opened Twitter real quick before the show, and I saw footage that looked like there were bombs, and it said hashtag World War III, and I was just kind of like, I don't even feel like investigating this right now. Like, I'm so burnt out on the idea that it's like, yeah, okay, that can happen or not, whatever.
I wish World War III to be a surprise. I don't need to find out about it on Twitter.
I think the funniest thing is when World War III does start, my Twitter feed, like the way that it works, it's going to be like trending topics. And like the first thing is going to be a hashtag Bidenomics. And then number two is going to be hashtag Chris Chan. And then number three is going to be World War III. And number four is going to be Alec Baldwin acquitted.
Wow. My current Robin Williams is trending on Twitter for me.
Cripes.
Because we talked about Robin Williams and looked at like two tweets that mentioned him. That's fucked, right?
Now I'm angry. This is sad space. Good night, everyone.
And Netanyahu is trending, but it looks like that's spelled wrong. I don't think that's how you spell that man's name. Maybe it is. I don't know. Twitter's dumb. My cat wants me to feed him. Goodbye, everybody.